Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. It is that time on a Wednesday evening in the month of March. That time on Wednesday evening that we go live at the 8 p.m. hour, 8 to 9 p.m. hour on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Once again, you have reached the one, the only, the K. Thompson Live Show. I am also what's commonly known as the Sun, and you are, lady.
I am K. Thompson, and I'm live.
K. Thompson, I'm Citizen Eric yeah. Citizen Payne here, and we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff happening today on the show as we try to hook up some things. Let me say hello to one of our co-hosts, Mr. Byron Saunders. What's going on, Byron?
Peace and love, my brother, and my hey, Thompson, live. I'm loving it. You know, is it springtime? Where are we? I don't know. I'm so confused.
North Pole, Byron. You're in the North Pole. That's where you are.
In the North Pole.
Hello.
6 to 10 inches of snow. Oh, my goodness. Well, welcome to the second day of spring.
Yeah, wow. I mean, absolutely amazing.
Wow.
It's supposed to be first tonight, and we hope everybody is staying in and listening to us and also
That's
being
right.
warm and being careful, because these are dangerous times. This is no kidding. This weather is awful. It is really, it hasn't been this cold. And I don't remember the last time it's been this cold with all the snow and ice. Wow. So I hope people are really bundling up, especially when you go out and sure that everything is okay, because you want to be sure that you maintain your health and
your wealth.
Also, I want to say hello to Gina Payne Scott.
Well, shalom.
But you know, in from Bermuda.
The way in from Bermuda, newest stuff to talk about.
Yeah, boy. Well, indeed, I am all the way here from Bermuda, and I haven't been here. I have not been in this sort of snow in a long time. It is stunning. It is beautiful. One of the things I absolutely love to see are the snow that piles on top of the trees, and so all of the branches that have, you know, the snow that is covering. It is, I mean, it is stunning, that blanket of soft white thing. And you know what? And I eat snow. And when we were little, it was always like, be careful for the yellow. And I didn't get it at you know, when I was little, like, oh, why yellow? Why be careful for the yellow? But obviously I get that, you know, now. But the thing is, living in Bermuda, Bermuda is subtropical. So one of the things about Bermuda is it's absolutely stunning. However, being subtropical, We get a winter. It's like 2 months of winter. It's clearly nothing like here. But one of the things I do miss about Bermuda are the change of the seasons. I love to see, particularly in the fall, the beautiful change of seasons. I mean, the leaves on the trees, all of those brilliant, beautiful colors of all of the leaves. You know, the birch, the yellow, the red, and every hue of the colors in between. I mean, honestly, that's one thing that I miss.
Bermuda is so beautiful, you know, with the ocean, with the water, and no snow. I don't like snow. I have to say that. You can't get into the city. You can't get into New York. You can't move. There is nothing but whiteness all around, and it is pretty damn cold. So, no snow for me.
Yeah, but the like I said, the whole subtropical thing, like I say, people, they laugh when, you know, they call sometimes and like, how's the weather? And I'm like, well, it's certainly beautiful, but it's cold. So what I mean about cold in Bermuda, and then I'm not going to go on about weather so much because it is what it is. But if you ever go down the shore here or wherever, and you know that dampness in the evening where it's just that and inside of the houses, it just feels really, really damp and moist. And because, and then the ocean breeze that is blowing in the air, while it might say, you know, 55 degrees and that doesn't sound cold, it is really cold because the dampness. And in Bermuda, the houses traditionally were not built with central heating. So a lot of the times, very often, it's colder inside than it is outside. And Bermuda houses are built with cement and limestone. So it's just that dampness that sort of gets into your bones and you can't shake it for 2 months. But it's beautiful, you know.
Yeah, that's all that is great. And it's easy for someone who does not live in this environment coming home, having been in it for a while, as I was living on the West Coast. But right about now, those of us have been here for the 1500 storm in the last 2 weeks. I was all gung-ho to come home and experience the snow and walking around like we used to when we were kids. Right about now, I'm ready for it to be done. And I'm sure a lot of other people who have been surviving through this crazy weather, really extreme weather, it's really something. Yeah, it's run its course as far as we're concerned. We have a lot of stuff. We got a special. I think we're going to have Dr. Len Jeffries, a historian, that is always one of my favorite people to have on and talk to him about various things going on. Let me see if this is Dr. Jeffries calling us in. Hello, Dr. Jeffries. Is that you? I'm at 201.
Dr. J. Okay,
hey, Dr. Jeffries. This is Eric Payne. I'm sitting here with my sister Gina Payne Scott.
How are you?
And I was also co-hosting for us, and we have Byron Saunders. And welcome to the show once again. How are you doing today?
Well, it's great to be on the show, and but it's rough looking outside, seeing what you got to deal with over the next day or two. But, you know, I've been used to this all my life. I'm 81, born and raised in January, and so I'm used to it. You have to work with it and move on.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Dr. Jeffries, you know, we always get into these historical, obviously, conversations with you, yourself being a historian, Africanist history, and what do you think about the current situation here with our president congratulating a dictator? I guess Putin's not he's a semi-dictator,
right.
I suppose, but someone who is surely is alleged to not play it all the way straight. From a historical context, I mean, there's some similarities in history like that, wouldn't you say?
Well, the thing is, we have a serious historical moment now because we really don't know what is the fullness of this current president that we have. There's so much that has been covered over and hidden, and there's so much that people don't want to reveal, but it seems that it's going to be pushing, it's going to come out. So to have him criticize everybody, ball players, actress, his own party colleagues, and never have him give a critical analysis of the leader of Russia. That's something serious there that he's been covering up, and we need to, you know, keep our eyes open because he may pull several tricks in order to prevent the truth from emerging. So everybody knows that the leader of Russia has a history. KGB, their secret organization, and coming to power and using all kinds of means to sustain the power, and to have our president treated like he's a saint and a new coming. It's something seriously wrong there, and we need to be prepared for it. So as a historian, political scientist, who's been around with his eyes open for the last 81 years, I can see some dire circumstances emerging as people are organized to support his insanity. At the same time, we don't know what diabolical relationships he's developed overseas with people, particularly the Russians. And
right.
But this is what the price we pay. We're supposed to be a democracy. So there is a flow of ideas and institutions and policies that we have to tolerate, including opposition. But there's much more to this than meets the eye.
Yeah.
So
let me just go in and welcome our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. How you doing this evening, Wayne?
Hi, good evening, everyone. And it sounds like we have the legendary Dr. Leonard Jeffries on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you
yes,
are.
Brother.
You
are.
I'm sorry. The voice, the inflections and the intonation just sounded just like him. I took a wild guess. I guess
yeah,
I'm wrong. I apologize.
You are correct. You are correct. We have Dr. Len Jeffries with us. You are, in fact, correct.
Okay.
And we're just getting his perspective from a historical perspective about what's going on with our president. Really briefly, I'm reminded, at least in terms of domestic issues, you know, I'm reminded the way this guy acts and the way a lot of these his accomplices, I'll say for lack of a better term, or party members have enacted. And I'm kind of reminded of when I was a kid in the 60s when you had a lot of these representatives that were so blatantly racist and so blatantly opposed to civil rights and the allowing of African Americans to the type of things that were blatantly going on in the public sphere and certainly in the House of Representatives. I mean, this kind of reminds me of those times, if I'm not correct. Dr. Jeffries, do you see similarities from that perspective? And chime in here, guys, as we're talking. Well, go ahead, Dr. Jeffries.
Yes. One of my fortes, one of the things I like best, is to look at history and institutions, organizations, and movements and try to make an analysis and a comparison. And I think that's what we have to do if we want to have go deep in terms of understanding what's happening. Certainly these 60s, from the point of view of the history of this country and around the world, was a special period of struggle and different forces on either side empowering themselves and ready for an explosion. In fact, those of us in Jersey lived in the explosion because I remember coming back from Africa in 67 after I spent a couple of years doing my research on economic and political development in Africa. And Newark was going through its trials and its tribulations, and there was a protest and whatnot at City Hall over the leader of the Board of Education. And I could feel that things were not quite what they used to be, and there was going to be an explosion. And sure enough, when I did talk at City Hall, I said, I mentioned the fact that things look like they're going to get out of hand. And within weeks after that, there was the explosion. We call it the Newark Rebellion. Some people call it the Newark Riots. And it's sat right next to a political movement that had been moving throughout the black community in America, and that was the Black Power. And so you had the Newark explosion, and then within months you had the Black Power movement where people were sitting together trying to figure out how we can improve our circumstances, situation, how we can mobilize forces. And so you had this enormous clash. While we were in the Black Power movement in Newark, there was an explosion in Detroit. And the Detroit delegation, I remember, said they were sorry, but they had to leave and be on the ground in terms of seeing what was happening in Detroit and what they could do about it. So the 60s was an enormous period of clash between conservative forces and liberal forces, between the black community trying to find its identity. And so we need to make a comparison between the 60s and these times, because it's very real. And also in the 67, 68, you had the struggle over the presidency. And you had also Martin Luther King moving with power in the South, and eventually that led to his assassination in April the 4th. We're coming on to the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. And
Dr. Jeffrey,
seems like yesterday.
Wayne?
Yes.
Wayne.
I'm sorry.
This is Gina. That's okay.
Hi,
no,
Gina. How are you?
How are you?
Okay.
I said you must not have heard
okay.
me here. How you doing? Yeah, I came in the other day. I came in on Friday.
Right. And my sympathy to
yeah.
the entire family. I'm going through the same thing myself. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, very sorry to hear that. Yeah, for our listeners, you know, not to, you know, have the conversation go in a sad direction, but, yeah, you know, first cousin, you know, passed away. But one of the things about my cousin, about our cousin, Kim Joyner, was that Kim had, you know, with our ballet background, all, you know, most of us still are still very athletic and you know, into the fitness world. Kim had continued on with her dance, and she joined a liturgical dance with the Black Church, a dance ministry, a women's dance ministry. And at her service, beautiful homegoing service, we had her dance sisters, and they did a beautiful piece to a common song. What song was that, Jesus? Forget the name of the song, but it was so beautiful, and they had these white flags, and, you know, as they danced up and down, it was so moving and so intense. And this conversation that Dr. Jeffries, you know, started about in the 1960s, I was born, you know, in the early 1960s, but the times that we're living in now reminds me so much of the videos that I used to see, you know, of the 60s. And the parallels are really scary with this current president right now and the type of videos we used to see back then. It's very, very scary. It's very bizarre trying to figure out what you – and the one thing I'm trying to, you know, bring the two topics together is that what I do recall – and what I learned is that the Black Church was so very poignant in getting the Black community together. And that's where, you know, we were able to share information and, you know, have, I guess, you know, secret meetings and public meetings, which, like you said, led up to Dr. King's passing. But the parallels from then to now. So I'm wondering, do you guys feel that we need somehow to get the Black Church involved on a higher level to sort of, you know, I don't know, combat this resurgence of this in your face racism, and you know, slowly but surely, you know, who knows what they're doing in public and private? You know, are they going to dismantle, you know, our rights to vote? You know, what's going on? Do we need to go back into the Black Church and have our, you know, secret meetings and bring about some sort of revolutionary change?
Uh-oh, you sound like you got some of that Black Panther spirit then passed on to you.
Yeah. You know,
well, I think you hit an important point. In order to move with power and force, in order to achieve what your plans and objectives are, things have to connect. And there are three things that are most important in pulling together a movement that's going to be successful. And I refer to it as systems analysis. It's individuals moving important. It's organizations moving important. It's movements important. But they have to be worked into a system capability because you're up against systems. What we're seeing with the Trump thing is the interplay of powerful systems. Some we can see and some we can't see. But you can see these systems trying to control the three elements of systems capability, and that is the economic capability, the political capability, and the cultural capability. So what you had was a dynamic explosion in the 60s of the economic question. That's first and foremost. And then to do anything in terms of the economics, you have to have politics as an interplay. Politics helps you manage your economics. And then to make sure that the economics and politics can serve the people, particularly a large number of the people, particularly the people who don't have the political power, you have to have culture. So I think what you're mentioning is that there's a cultural dimension to this struggle. There's certainly a political dimension, and underlying it all is the economic question. So now that's heightened at this point. And so when you're talking about culture, you're talking about the Thompsons certainly were in the middle of all the cultural dimensions of my 80 years. I hate to put somebody's history in play in terms of her age, because she certainly don't look like it. She still looks like a lovely queen mother, but there's an age, age there. And the famous Thompson sisters, hey, my heart still jumps. But I'm saying that part of that cultural dimension is well, there were strong brothers now. There were strong brothers. I'm not going to go into the brother combination. But the 60s was a period when our system capability came together, and this period now is when our system capability has to come together. Otherwise, we'll be overwhelmed by the negative systems against us.
Professor Jeffrey, if I might. I'm sorry, Kate. You go ahead.
Yeah. Is that Wayne?
Yeah.
Hi, Wayne.
No, I just
How
wanted
you?
To say one thing. I
wait,
mean,
wait,
I
wait,
was
wait,
speaking.
Wait, I'm just getting to the mic, but how are you? Dr.
Okay,
Jeffries,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Dr. Jeffries, I haven't talked to you in a long time. How are you doing?
Can you hear me? Yes, I can. I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, this is Kay.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, how are you? How are you doing?
In other words, because of the storm, it's a little bit, I'm tired of it. But because of the activity going around, and particularly the cultural dimensions, particularly this whole question of the Black Panther movie and phenomena, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Because I need to have my mind taken off of Trump every day, every night, looking at the TV, listening to the commentators, reading the news. And so it was good to have something cultural that we can take a hold of come into our midst. And so I feel very good about these times, you know. But as Frederick Douglass says, it's going to be a struggle. If there is no struggle, you ain't going to make no progress. So you're going to have to be prepared to struggle.
And we know you've been in the struggle for a long time, and we're so glad to hear your voice and your expertise and your history. And, you know, the Black community, our African American community, really appreciate you, you know.
Well, I
Dr.
call
Dr.
it Richard. Our history. Yes, certainly. Go ahead.
This is Byron Saunders, a fellow historian and co-host. The question that I have, because it basically, as we're summing up the obviously the resurgence of our Afrocentrism and our commitment to our movement, which has never, in my opinion, has never stopped. It's always been in transition. It's as it is called, the movement. But at what point?
Yes.
At what point do we, the people, shut down our government? As we know, on Friday of this week, there's the children who are marching, the students who are going to Washington. As we know, if we've seen the gun Moms Against Guns, they have been in serious protest. We have a situation in Austin, Texas, which is implicating terrorism threats against our African-American community, and it's going on and on. So it's not just our African brothers, American brothers and sisters, who are in dire danger of our democratic demise. It is our country. So at the point of which you as a historian, looking at all the tangible evidence, at what point do we, the people, shut down this federal government, not waiting for the Republicans or Democrats, but we the people? Are we at that particular point in the history of our nation as we are being a witness to all that's going on?
Well, that's a very strong point that you raised, and a very real point. The people have to be involved, but that involvement should be the people conscious of where they're going and what they want to do, the people organized to be able to make people movement work. They had a struggle in the 70s in Africa. Our brother, Robert Van Der Lop, he filmed it. And out of the struggle in Angola around the ending colonialism, that's the revolution, he did a film called Aluta Continua, The Struggle Continues. And then a short period later, he moved over to the other side of Africa where the Portuguese were holding back the Africans. And he did another film, A Povo Organizado. In other words, the struggle continues and the people have to be organized in order to move. And so you're right. We can have movement in the streets. We can have a 500,000 people standing on the mall or 1,000,000 on the mall. But if they're not organized around a program, it'll be, unfortunately, the same old, same old. So there has to be a leadership component that gives a program and helps the people understand that a demand is not enough. It has to be supported and backed up by understanding the economic dimensions, understanding the political dimensions, and understanding the cultural dimensions. But to have these millions of children moving around our world is beautiful. But we also have to make sure that they have some program objectives and know where power lies and how to target the power.
Dr. Jeffries, if I could just jump in. This is Eric. Let me just jump in here real quick because that's an excellent point you made, Byron. And it seems to me that you talk about a movement and it must be an objective by the movement, by the people in the movement, and what they want and the goals need to be clearly defined. And when it was a civil rights movement, right, there weren't as many fragments. It wasn't as fragmented, you know. We wanted civil rights, and the people that were being denied civil rights were black people. And it was pretty straightforward, or people of color, or people who were being discriminated against. Now we fast forward to 2018, right? So there's so many fragments of people that have issues. You got moms against guns, but those moms against guns, and the majority of those moms that might be in that gun category, moms against guns, might also be Republicans, right? And they might also, and you have the moms and women's march against or for women's rights, but a lot of those women, 90 or whatever large percentage of those women who happen to be white voted for Trump, but they want women's rights. So there's a lot of fragments to all of these issues, right? And the fragments allow a situation like this to occur, a Trump situation like this to occur, where you have a chaos president, where everything is chaos. And those people, we have to identify those people that are going to be a part of our movement as well as us wanting us to be a part of theirs, right? So we talk about gun control and these moms that just now are starting getting or that have not just now but recently started getting real riled up about gun control, you know, when the white kids started shooting each other. But when the black people have been shooting each other for 50, 60 years, nobody was talking about guns, just like when black people were using crack and dying, they wanted to put us in jail, and the opioid crisis now is a crisis that needs to be dealt with the health care. So when we talk about putting these movements forward and the people moving forward, we got to make sure that all the people want the same thing. And I think the genius about someone like Dr. King was that he was able to combine all of these movements, find common ground with a lot of different movements, you know, made it a human rights issue, started talking about the poor people's march, right? So if you're poor, if you fit in this category, regardless of your race, if you looked at things, then you said, yeah, I need to be a part of this march. But now what you have is people who kind of, they're poor too, but they reject the notion that a presidency of a Barack Obama was good enough to help them, right? So the majority of poor people who might happen to be white still, and yet they still hate Barack Obama and the programs that he put forward, right, for them. And so where the fragment comes is that the individuals play on the racism, right? I saw Paul Ryan being asked about what he thinks about Donald Trump's extramarital things. He said, I don't think about it for 12 seconds. Well, you don't think about it for 12 seconds, but you can think about it all of a sudden. So they fragment the things, and that's the way that they justify or the way they work to make sure that nothing actually gets done, nothing of any substance. Am I accurate in that assessment? I would
get no, that's a, right? you know, your people got to be proud of you. That's fantastic. In other words, that comes out of that background and experience you had. No, that was a fantastic analysis, because a lot of movement, a lot of trying to make demands would fit into Trump's agenda. He thrives on chaos. He contributes to it. And then he comes in as the savior, make America great again. Now, when was had that slogan a part of our psyche without under when was America great? When they had slavery here? When was America great? When they were stealing the land from the Native Americans? When was America great? Mm-hmm. When they kept the women from voting up until the 1920s? So that mythology of America's greatness needs to be dissected. America is what it is because of struggle, and because those who were at the bottom struggled to find a way to as close to the top as they could get. At every point in the so-called American reality, there was a struggle. And so the ideals of America, freedom, justice, and equality, have to be posed against the reality that there was not freedom. This nation was founded on enslavement of African peoples. And justice, it was injustice. The Native American lands were taken from them. So you can't go back to the old times, but you can deal with the struggle that we've had to wage every moment that we've been here to help make the ideals of America part of some of the reality of America. But no, your analysis was excellent. I'm sure everybody's sitting back and saying, hey, the brother has it together. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, Wayne, I'm curious to know what your thoughts about this are. You know, having been, program director of LIB in New York, I know you have a lot of experience in all of these topics and how to, you know, rally our people. We have a lot of common ground, but, you know, the whole fragmenting, you know, we're not a monolithic people, as my mother used to say.
No.
So, yes, we've got a lot. Go ahead.
I happen to agree with you, Gina. Thank you. And the only thing I was going to say is that, two things. I don't want to forget all those who are not in a position to go to D.C. this weekend during the protest, that there's going to be one upstate New York in New Paltz on the Beacon-Newburgh Bridge. We expect a turnout of at least 12,000 people, and that starts at 10 o'clock. I'm involved in that. And the other thing is that with regard to the fragments, you know, Eric and the professor, they're on point. I mean, this is part of their game plan, that as long as they can keep us confused and analyzing every facet of what's going on, you know, he gets a chance to promote his agenda with his followers, although they're still a minority. And the confusion just prevails, and it's just one of those things. But coming from someone who has not slept since 1951, if I may cite my age, the thing is that the difference between what I lived through in the 60s as a child from what I see today, that the leadership has never been this decadent. The leadership has never been this ignorant. Even if they were bigoted during the Eisenhower, Kennedy, Reagan to a lesser extent, Bush and Nixon, that's what I was trying to remember, era, you know, at least there was at least some modicum amount of civility there that you could interact. We have a damn buffoon sitting in the White House with all
literally
sorts of flaws. Yeah, and that's it. And that's what bothers me, that there's so many people out here, you know, and I live amongst them, I'm certain you do too, where they're still promoting his agenda, and the Republicans, for the most part, are very quiet. I've never seen that, you know. Again, I've been on the planet for a minute, and this is news to me. I mean, and I think the level of activism that is going on has to continue, because it's breathtaking to see white folks actually looking at our playbook from the 60s and trying to, engage the change of thinking. And that's it, you know.
Yeah. You know, speaking about the organization that needs to, with all of the chaos that he does create, you know, either he's such a diabolical evil genius, or he's just straight, honest to God, fly by the seat of his pants, you know, buffoon, idiot. But, you know, Seed is a genius, or he's just, you know, an idiot, and it's just, you know, perfect storm of chaotic behavior. And, hey, well, having said that, at one of the congressional black caucuses many years ago before my Uncle Donald, Congressman Payne, passed away, I remember Marion Wright Edelman, who actually is one of my superheroes from that era. She spoke about the fact that, you know, every anniversary of the March on Washington, an anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, and all of these, you know, anniversaries that we have, one of the things that she cited at that time was that we need to do what was done back then, which was, A, to get angry and have enough of being sick and tired, and then going forward with an organized plan, starting with, you know, back then with the boycott, but also having a very clear and defined plan. And what she said was that we need to organize and sign people up and give them a clear directive. And then what we need to do, she said, is to organize, give them a clear directive and a next step. And she repeated it like 4 and 5 times. We need to organize. So the theme was we need to organize, organize, organize with very clear objectives, because people can get riled up. But without someone taking that leadership role, like Dr. Jeffries just said, things can easily fall apart. There are a lot of passionate people, a lot of people with, you know, the agenda with ultimately us all getting, you know, getting together, having a fair share of our pie. But there are a lot of passionate people with a lot of different agendas, good, bad, or indifferent. But there has to be some clear objectives for steps 1 and 2. And then, you know, the community can thrive on, you know, all of the other fragments.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. And I just wanted before one of you guys jump in, that's, you know, a lot of elections and a lot of campaigns now, they give people action points, mm-hmm. activities that they can do. The average person that wants to get more involved, that might not be as savvy to know what you do to get involved in the campaign. And, mm-hmm. you know, experiencing that work with my cousin, you know, we get things in the mail, you know, usually from the abortion people, which is a very active lobbying organization. You'll get postcards from people all over the country. I mean, people that they're not even in his district, but they're active and they get tasks to do. And that needs to be done. I mean, obviously the kids are doing that now with their resistance to the current gun laws, but it takes a lot of organization, and it takes people to be on one accord. You know, I mean, we can't just have some people that are willing to have some of their needs met. So they're not going to come down as hard or not going to be as active because their personal needs are met. Yeah. And that's kind of how it works when you're in a country that is supposed to be a democracy and you want kind of one for all and majority rule. I mean, if I'm not mistaken here, gentlemen, I mean, I'm interested to hear what you guys' thoughts as well, that need, like for me, I'm for the rights of our people. And I cannot, you know, as I go through life and seeing that black people still catching hell, then I'm going to always be promoting, you know, I'm always going to be a race man. You know, people talked about America being a post-racial society with the election of Barack Obama. It almost was nostalgic for me that, okay, black people don't have nothing to fight for no more. But lo and behold, America did not let us down, and they showed us that we always going to have to struggle here in this country. So I say that to say, when I meet these other people with these other issues, that they want to be accepted and Bruce Jenner wants to be called Caitlyn Jenner and those type of issues, I'm down with them. But my first allegiance is to my people and to still get the rights and obtain the ability and the right for us to live free in this world like anybody else. I'm interested to hear your gentlemen's thoughts on that as well.
Well, again, this is Dr. J. A very good analysis of what this whole thing is all about, and I was glad our young sister mentioned Marion Wright Edelman. I knew Marion when she was Marion Wright. And again, we have to put her in a time frame. I met her in 1961, and then she went to Africa in 1962 on the same program I had gone on, Operation Crossroads Africa. And my nephews,
what was it called?
Hakeem, Operation Crossroads Africa. It was
okay.
A dynamite program put together by a black minister, again, the influence of the church, who had gone to Lincoln University with someone called Francis Nkrumah, who changed his name later to Kwame Nkrumah. And so he had been in the 40s with Nkrumah, and so he developed an appreciation of Africa, and then he took hundreds, if not thousands, of us over the 10-year period in the 60s. We were able to get this training in Africa. And so while Donald Payne was doing his thing with the YMCA, those of us who had been touched by Reverend Robinson, including Marion Wright Edelman, we were able to get an exposure to the larger world. So that's when I began to see the systems component to what we're talking about. You have to struggle, but you're not just struggling against this evil genius, if you want to give him any kudos, an evil genius, this Trump man, but he represents a system of rich white men with property and power that have ruled the world, and particularly America. And so unless we have an analysis that we're up against not just individuals or movements, we're up against an institutionalized system, and it takes a system to deal with a system. So as we have our movements and our consciousness raised and we move and organize around these important issues, it's got to gel into a system capability, and that can leave us with real changes and maybe permanent changes to our circumstance and situation. So I'm optimistic. I've been through hell and back. The biggest attack in the history of the world on a professor was waged against me because I was dealing with the truth of who we are, who and what we are as African peoples or African American peoples or African Caribbean peoples. And and that big attack just strengthened me, and the support came from everywhere. It came from the churches. It came from political leaders. Oh. It came from our culture folks and came from the people. And so if there's someone who knows the power of people and their movements and their consistent struggles, I certainly bear witness.
Yeah, well, you know, talking about the leadership, also, it's really, really very important there to not let the powers that be make us think that we don't have support. With the social media right now, they're speaking about during the last election about, you know, this whole term fake news. I mean, they're literally able to create situations that even, you know, the most savvy and intelligent person all of a sudden rides the tide of what is out there social media-wise. So, you know, great, Facebook is out there. It's a great form of communication. But now come to find out they were complicit in, you know, basically brainwashing via social media with the tides of news and, you know, just having this whole study.
You see the feeds on their page.
Right.
And with and not challenge anybody, yeah. I want to get someone like Byron does. Byron, you do, and I'm singling you out because a lot of times, you know, you post things on your page as well on Facebook and kind of, you know, what we've been noticing that the social media pages is that there's a way to share history amongst our people, right? And I would know, Byron, you often do that as well as posting historical things as well as cultural things. And I'm wondering your thoughts on the – go ahead.
The thing is the paucity of our information and our history really can't – we don't have the luxury of having to wait for that book to be written in the history pages.
Mm-hmm.
So much of what we have is still in our cedar chest, still locked into our Bibles, still locked into the social network groups that we thrive in, our social groups, the civil rights movement groups themselves, SCLC, SNCC, CORE, you name it, NAACP. Yes, we still have to add in the sororities, the fraternities, and the men's clubs, the 100 Black Men, the 100 Black Women, the Nation of Islam, and the critical factoid that we are not really taking advantage of is the communication of our history, the ancestral stories that must be told in order for us to begin to connect the dots. When we don't know our history, it is impossible for us to even begin to understand or comprehend what freedom really means. And so programs like this is what I consider to be part of the new Underground Railroad Express. We're making stops in all our neighborhoods. We are a global effort by being able to have Kay Thompson live. We're Dr. Leonard Jeffries and our honored guest of Gina Payne and yourself, Eric, and Wayne, and Kay herself. We are functioning as the new Underground Railroad Express. We must continue this method where we engage our community with the history of our people, and thank goodness our arts are part of that movement, because the music, I'm always reminded, the thing about the South African anti-apartheid movement was that it was those kids who kept the rhythm of the beat of the drum alive. And without that movement never would have succeeded. So we're doing our fair share, and that's why I participate every day by posting African American history. We have to educate our people.
Right.
I concur.
So we're going to jump in there.
Hello.
Were you going to say something, Wayne? It sounded like you were going
to. No.
In.
I just said I happen to agree with Byron. The thing is that. You know, it's one thing to be misled by the social media, and that was one of the problems that I had around the time that, you know, we had stopped doing LIB, BLS, and Air America and all that. It was really coming into the fold in the early 2000s, 2008, 2009. We were on the precipice of a recession. And the thing is that a lot of the newspaper guys were hit first. Then it just went to radio and TV after, and they were coming up with all sorts of excuses to get rid of people. But the bottom line is that the basics are still required of any seasoned journalist to go out and analyze and tell the truth. The problem with the social media is that everybody is an authority. You could take something in film and edit it a certain way to project a certain image, and now I'm glad it's just come out in the last couple of days about Facebook. It's not something I really have taken, you know, an issue with, but now that's under investigation. So, it is what it is.
Everybody. I mean, it allows everybody to have an opinion. Everybody's got an opinion, of course, and allows everybody to express their opinion. What it doesn't allow for, let me just say what it does allow for in a situation like Facebook, in terms of movements and organizations trying to affect agendas. Something like Facebook and certain social media platforms allow for infiltration of those who would spread misinformation, right? And allows for infiltration of those who would bring down those organizations, right? I mean, Byron talked about all those old school organizations where we shared the information was gotten from reputable sources. You know, Black Radio was a reputable source for the Black community. The sororities, fraternities, and all of the Black organizations are a reputable source of information. So when information is passed from one to the other, you know where it's coming from and what its overall objective is, the same as your objective. As opposed now, with the advent of our internet age, people can hack. You can get people can infiltrate, people can steal information, people can misrepresent information. And also with that, when you have people who don't have the ability to deduct and reason and have critical thinking and just believe whatever they read, like when someone puts a post up talking about Hillary Clinton and those guys have a conspiracy about child pornography and child sex slaves out in the back of a pizza parlor, and some idiot reads that and goes and shoots up the pizza parlor trying to save people, you know, okay. But it needs some discernment, because there's a lot of individuals walking around in this society that are uneducated. As soon as they read, edumacated. And these are the same individuals, too. A lot of them might be individuals who believe kind of the racist tactics, you know, that they're superior over one race or another. You know, some people don't want to be educated because the facts will make their head explode, right? The facts, because then it threatens their whole little belief system that was created. And the myth of the United States. I mean, you know, I'm a little bit hardcore with it, because in order to change the system, the whole system has to be overthrown, right? Because the system was based on like you said, Dr. Jeffries, subjugating people, enslaving people, oppressing people, and then they created a whole myth and a whole storyline to say that the people that were doing that were the heroes fighting against some sort of great oppression, and they needed to further their way and their way of life, and they were ordained by God and all this other poppycock, to quote a not-so-great American. But, you know, all this stuff was created to justify a certain form of life and a certain treatment that you put upon people. You wanted to say, Kate Thompson's going to come in with words of advice.
What do you mean coming in? I'm going to talk to my friend Dr. Len Jeffries. It's because of him that the movement is steady,
right.
Is still on.
Right.
And, Len, I can't, you know, thank you enough for your contributions, yours and your wife, your contributions to keeping the African-American community known, the history of us, and just keeping it going on. So we're going to be here for a long period of time. We're not going anywhere. So anytime you want to be on, I'm going to invite you on and on, because, you know he's a hot information. He knows the movement. He knows the fight, you know. When Nelson Mandela came into town, tell him about that experience, because that was the North. Boom. You know?
Well,
yes.
Can I just say, before you interject, Dr. Jeffries, I want to echo what my mom said about, you know, thanking you about that thing. I have to talk super loud.
Yeah.
Sorry. But is that I remember very, very clearly, because I would go with my mom out of most of them, my siblings, over to New York when she went on to record her show. And I also, finally, myself a little, so I, every Wednesday she gave me the platform, and I had, you know, my children's segment, so I was able to, you know, co-host with her every Wednesday. Having said that, I do remember pretty much everything about that experience, about going over. And one of the other things that I genuinely appreciate was that, you know, I was on the front row, and I was able to listen to all of you guys who were and are experts on the African American experience. I remember very clearly when my mom had on Dr. Jeffries, Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Yosef Yakinen,
yes.
Dr.
Right.
Clark,
sure.
And you know,
right.
On her television show. And then, of course, Gus Henningberg. And I remember very clearly all of those things. And then also, like it is with Gil Noble. And I do remember back at the time, before social media, when there was an issue about someone's show possibly being taken or needing funding, what was it? It was the letter-writing campaign. And so we had to rally
right.
people to write letters to ABC and to keep these shows on. But I – right, is that organization. And the last time I saw Gil Noble, rather, was in New Jersey at the Dames, you know, the organization with the women of, you know, a lot of influencers. And I was able to talk to him about that. And he looked up and he just laughed. He said, oh, my goodness, you've been around a long time, you know, trying to figure out my age and all. But I was, you know, because I hung with my mother. But I remember that being a really, really, you know, big task. But people rose to the occasion. And I think, you know, with you talking about us needing, you know, proper information, we do have to be able to discern and weed out the people who just, okay, who just, you know, come up with maybe a tagline or some sort of a title and then run with that versus the real information. And one of my big things is, one of my pet peeves are people who get on CNN and get on the horn and try to put the people who were here, the ones of you that are left, out to pasture. We can't get enough information from you all. I would defer at all costs those of you who are still here, the ones who are on the front line, the one who actually were at the March on Washington, part of the organizing, knew Dr. King, knew all of the players. And then also, who was that other, the other minister of the church, the light-skinned guy of a church in New York? What was his name? You guys know, he's also a photographer.
Reverend Butch. Reverend Calvin Butch.
Reverend Calvin Butch.
The pastor.
When the name gets called, I remember him. But, yeah, but, you know, not putting you guys out to pasture. And, please, anytime you do get an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
we need to hear. Remember Gus Henningberg with his show, Positively Black. Yeah.
Also, too, I wanted to say, you know, also, too, in terms of the news people that were on the front lines. I mean, we have Wayne in our midst. And,
yeah.
And Wayne, you were, I mean, I, like I said, like I told you when I first met you, you know, remembering listening to you on WLIB radio and your newscast. You're at the black newsman that is at the forefront of reporting a lot of these stories, you know.
Thank you. And I stood on the shoulders of a lot of great people. And as you mentioned that, we just lost Les Payne from Newsday yesterday.
Right.
Great loss.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I was going to mention that. Les was a special spirit moving among us. I'm surprised. I was just with him not too long ago. I didn't realize that he was in a situation where we might lose him. But he was very significant, and not only as an individual and with Newsday and whatnot, but working with the National Black Organization, the Organization of Black Journalists and whatnot.
Right.
So you have to organize, and you got to – you use your individual talents, and the beautiful thing with me is that this struggle has been a family affair. My personal family, the community that I've been a part of, to have Barringer High School, a predominantly Italian, little bit Irish high school, and have the few of us blacks there. You had at Barringer High School someone called Amiri Baraka, who was called Leroy Jones at that time. You had two brothers called the Payne brothers, Donald and Bill, and you had the Jeffries brothers, Marlon, my younger brother, and myself. And you had, so it was a family affair. We've been able to interact with organizations and people and movements. So we do need the elders' experience as a part of this powerful generation of youth that we now have. And so I'm just glad to be a witness. But certainly I benefited from strong community, strong family, strong organizations. LIB and the radio station would let me go on there as if it was Gary Bird and the rest of them. We had an affair on the air. Gil Noble said, "You all got to come on here, Dr. Van, Dr. Clark." And then they go get Francis Cresswell and Van Sertima. And we've got to see what strength we had with calculated unity and institutional integrity and a program that meant the rise of our people, not just individuals, but the rise of our people as a collectivity. So
I'm excited
about the Black Panther. The Black Panther phenomenon coming on in a week or two again, coming back to deal with the significance of the impact of movies on our people. And the Black Panther, in spite of all the things that people say, oh, it ain't this, it's a sea change. All right, now.
Yeah. We want to say, we're going to see Black Panther. I've seen it too. We want to say thank you to Dr. Len Jeffries for calling in tonight.
Yep.
The K. Thompson Live Show. It's always a lively discussion when you call in, Dr. Jeffries. Thank you once again, Dr. Jeffries. You take care. Thank you,
all right, now.
Thanks.
Anytime.
All right.
My pleasure.
All right.
Peace.
I want to say thank you to Byron Saunders, one of our also co-hosts, resident historian / co-host, Byron.
Peace and love always. Wakanda forever.
There it is, brother. Yeah. There it is. I want to say thank you also to the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Yay.
Good. Thank you. It's great to hear Gina's voice. Just want to remind everybody, Newburgh Beacon Bridge, 12 noon Saturday, marching from New Paltz to Poughkeepsie.
All right, you got it. We'll do. See you then, Wayne. Want to say thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Gina.
This has been the Cave Thompson Live Show. Thanks to Gina Payne Scott for being our special co-host guest today.
Peace and love.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Cave Thompson Live Show. I'm Citizen Payne. You are a lady back there.
Me.
That's Cave Thompson. Thanks, everybody, for listening in.
It's been an honor.
Let's try to find some music for you all to listen to.
It's been an honor. I appreciate it.
Wakanda.